Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway now. When you hear my first guest, this is not a repeat of yesterday's show. She is so valuable to our community that she wears so many hats that Lynn Niewanner is here again today. Yes, so if you're a Lynn Niewanner fan, this is your lucky day. 2 days in a row, we get to hear from the lovely Lynn Niewanner. Today, she's got the hat on from the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County.
Can we take tomorrow off, please?
Yes.
Do you mind?
You hadn't been here for 5 years
I know,
and now twice.
Years.
But that's okay.
Hey,
we love her. And she is here to talk about all the great things that are happening at the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County, starting with, and still seats available at
you
the Senior Center tonight for the trivia contest. Tell us all about it.
Well, actually, you can walk in the door and we'll seat you. But I think it's not tonight, is it? It's tomorrow night.
Oh, it is.
It's Saturday. Yeah. Bahoozies out of me.
Okay.
No, it's tomorrow. Hello. I'm not ready.
Yes, I have it here. Saturday, April 23rd. Yes.
Yeah. At 7 o'clock tomorrow night, you can walk into the Senior Center and we will give you you can pay for. We're nice, but we're not that nice. You can buy a table and we will be playing trivia. And a lot of it is Quincy trivia, Illinois trivia, history trivia.
So, but there's some general things in there that everybody would know.
Absolutely.
And these Quincy trivia questions are not so off base that nobody would know.
No.
However, here's a little clue, because this could come up. The lattice fry may have been invented in Quincy, Illinois.
By Shorty.
By Cecil Sprout.
Shorty.
Yeah.
Yep.
Little Sprout, little Cecil.
His daughter lived at the Senior Center. I used to work at the Senior Center, so Mary didn't mention that part, 5 years ago when I retired. And his daughter lived with us there at the Senior Center. She was the pie baker at Sprouts.
Wow, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah.
So that may or may not come up, but the lattice fry was involved in a lawsuit over copyright infringement. So I learned that from Chuck Schultz the other day, who was the lawyer involved in that case when he was just a wee child. So tonight, if you just want to have fun and tomorrow night, if you want to have fun and learn a lot.
I work here. She does not. It's all right.
The Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County is having their trivia night at the Senior Center, 639 York. Lots of general trivia questions about music, movies, television, and some special categories. So.
And we're going to have a silent auction, too.
Good.
So we're cleaning out the basement over at the old library, the History Museum on the Square, and we found some gems down there.
Wow,
and
tell us about those.
We're going to put some things up for silent auction, and we have some beautiful stained glass pieces that we found. And if you ask me, well, I can tell you it's a blue, red, and clear patterned glass square, and a clear glass pointed arch top, and diamond-shaped stained glass. And those will be going up for silent auction. And then every single round, there's a prize at the end, cash prize at the end, and it's $100 for a table of eight. The Senior Center has a liquor license, so you can buy booze there, but you can bring your soft drinks and snacks. I'm in charge of snacks, not in charge of bringing my brain. And so, yeah, we're going to have a good time, a fun time. We've had this 2 years now at St. Francis Hall, and they were busy this year, so we moved it to the Senior Center, so I hope people find
us. Big. So find them at 6th and York, and lots and lots and lots of wonderful places. There'll be plenty of tables. There'll be plenty of snacks. You can get a adult beverage, or you can bring your own soft drinks if you would like.
Yep.
Okay.
We should have fun.
The next thing that's coming up that Lynn wants to talk about is a gentleman by the name of Tom Emery, who's written a book called Notable Women of Illinois History. Now, Tom Emery's from Carlinville, and he is much lauded by the Illinois State Historical Society. So he has lectured all over the United States, really, and he's very, very well known. And he's coming to Quincy on April 14th, which is a Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m., at, again, the Quincy Senior and Family Resource Center.
Yeah, you know, we used to have things at the old library, and I need a new hip. So anybody out there got a hip that they don't want, I could use it. But we're getting a new elevator over at the old library, and thank God, because a lot of us need it. And as soon as that happens, then we're going to move everything back to the the museum on the square, History Museum on the Square.
Well, and it outgrew its not only is the elevator, although I talked to Susie Wells Irwin yesterday. Susie Irwin Wells would be the appropriate way to say that. Susie Irwin Wells. And they are going to have their big rollout. And we'll be talking about that because the elevator campaign is fully underway now.
Yep.
There is a fund that's going to pay for most of it, but we need some local money. And they're going to get a brand new elevator over at 4th and Main so that they can have access to those upper floors. In the meantime, they've moved their Sunday programs to the Senior Center, which is totally handicap accessible.
Absolutely.
And frankly, this place across the street can't hold enough people sometimes for some of the things they've had. So let's talk about Tom Emery because 2 o'clock, Sunday, April 14th, he's going to bring in a crowd with his notable women of Illinois history.
And
so.
Mary, I checked, and I don't see your name in here anywhere.
It's
so
not.
I'm going to talk to him about it because I was shocked that your
name
was not there.
It wasn't Notorious Women of Illinois. It was notable.
Fascinating, notable women. Yeah, like Jane Addams and Mary Todd Lincoln. Mother Bickerdike. I heard about her at a Civil War roundtable some time ago, and fascinating people, all of them fascinating women. And so he'll be spending an hour, and I think he's very, very good at getting audience participation.
Yes.
So we're looking forward to him. Free cookies, free water, and we'd love to see you all there on Sunday, April 14th at 2 o'clock.
Gwendolyn Brooks, Frances Lillard, you know, some people that you've obviously heard of, some other people that really are notable and they've kind of been lost in history. So that definitely.
Right. And he's written a book.
And he's written his book and it will be there.
And also, I believe he has pamphlets about some of these women.
The great thing about going to these events is you can get the book signed by the author, which does make the book more valuable. So
it
if
sure
that's
does.
Something you really like. And then just looking ahead, Sunday, May 5th at 2 o'clock, again at the Senior Center, Cura Animarium, the Sacred Heart Province of the Order of the Friars Minor in North America. This is a history of the Franciscan movement from 1858, which includes Quincy, Illinois, of course, all the way up to 2023 last year. And so mark your calendars for that because Joe Zimmerman,
Father Joe
has written a book on that, and if you're into the Franciscan lifestyle and everything like that, you'll definitely want to be part of that. Lynn, always a pleasure to see you.
Hey, Mary, I'm taking tomorrow off. You do what you want.
Okay.
I'm going to volunteer at the library tomorrow, so I'll see you. If you come in, I'll see you there.
Oh, by the way, library book sale coming up at the end of the month.
It sure as heck is.
So if you want to get in early, become a friend of the library. For $10, you can go down to Secondhand Pros Bookstore today. You can become a friend of the library for $10, and you will get in
April
25,
26, and 27 is the sale to the public, and you can come early the day before and get first pick at all of the books, 50 cents an inch. You buy all the books you want.
Okay. What hat doesn't she wear? She's off to another thing now. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Lynn. We'll be back in a moment and talk about the stormwater issue in Hannibal. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. My guest today is Larry Craig. He's a concerned citizen from Hannibal. He's retired now. He's worn lots of hats, been a community leader in Hannibal for many years. And the stormwater issue is coming up on April 2nd on the Hannibal ballot. And so we're going to talk today and try to explain this to people, because if there's something completely unsexy, it's stormwater and water and rainwater runoff. I mean, I can't imagine anything more boring to talk about in a way. However, you start talking about people's wallet and they perk up.
Yeah.
So Larry, set the stage. This is not a problem that just happened in Hannibal. It's been happening in Hannibal for decades.
You're absolutely correct, Mary. It's a problem that has been developing well over 100 years in Hannibal. And bottom line, the nature of the problem is the city of Hannibal has no funding mechanism to maintain their stormwater system that they put in under the ground. And over the years, it's been some built with cobblestones, and it's been built with concrete pipes, and it's been built with galvanized pipes and all kinds of things. And it's in a very much area of disarray throughout the community. We had a excuse me. We had a public meeting last night at the American Legion Hall, and about 30 people were there, and Darren Gooden, the general manager of the Board of Public Works, was there showing pictures to people of the conditions.
Well, it's completely collapsed in some areas.
It is.
And so the things that are built upon it, whether it be the road or the Hannibal Police Department,
that's right,
is starting to sink.
Exactly.
Because you take out the underpinning.
You cite the Hannibal Police Department. Behind their office building in their parking lot, they had a collapse, and the keystone on this rock, 7-foot-tall rock tunnel, fell out, and then it started falling apart, and the parking lot caved in, and so that needs to be repaired. We've had other situations where roads have collapsed, and because there's no funding, the Board of Public Works gets a big steel plate and they screw it down to the road, secure it to the road, and people drive over it because there's no money to fix it.
And why is it? I guess I don't understand. First of all, Hannibal works differently than Quincy in a lot of towns. Like in Quincy, you know, well, I mean, the Hannibal Board of Public Works is part of the city, but it's kind of a separate entity.
It is.
So they do the water treatment. They do the wastewater treatment. So they clean the water and purify the water. Then they purify the waste.
And they provide electricity.
And they provide electricity, which is, and then, you know, we have private over here with Ameren. So that's a little bit, but why is stormwater different? Why isn't that part of
that's
it?
A good question. And
I mean, it seems, I mean, we have sewers. We have things here in Quincy. I mean, the rain comes down.
You
that's
know,
part of the sewer system.
You may remember that I, for about a 2.5-year period of time in 95 to 97, was on the city council. But I don't ever recall an issue on stormwater coming up that addressed to the city council. What happened and what has happened in the past, all those funds, those utilities funds that you just mentioned, electricity, water, and sewage, used to be combined into one fund, and the Board of Public Works would take care of everything out of that one fund. The Hancock Amendment came into law in the 80s and required that those funds be maintained separately and only be used to maintain what they were paid for. In other words, the electric bill could maintain the electric system, the water bill, the water system, and the sewer system, the sewer system, leaving nothing for stormwater, okay? So that happened in the 80s.
And that's when the problem...
And that's where we're at now,
yeah.
40 years later, without any funding mechanism. There's just no way to fix the problem. So we in February of 23... We put together, the Board of Public Works asked about 15 citizens to come together of various work persuasions, plant managers, business owners, retirees like myself and former chamber director, member of the city council, a former general manager of the Board of Public Works, a good variety of community citizens to come together to consider being asked to work together to try and develop a mechanism to solve this problem. And we met every month or twice a month from February through November and created and we considered total square footage of a person's property. We considered impervious area, which is the square footage of a roof, a deck, driveway, sidewalk on your property. Through that process, we decided that that was cost prohibitive for a good portion of our residents. And so we had to come up with something else. We need a mechanism for measurement. Well, what do we have? We have water meter and we have an electricity meter that we could look at. And short story, a water meter, the resident can kind of control, but can't always control. When the mechanism in your toilet fails and it starts leaking water 24/7, unless you're using that toilet and you hear it running, you don't know you have a problem. If you have a child or a grandchild visiting you and goes outside and turns on an outside faucet and you don't find it running for 3 days later, you've lost a lot of water. I have a water softener at my house. Several years ago, the mechanism that controls the on-off of the water regeneration process failed. And for 7 days, water ran continuously down the drain until the Board of Public Works calls me and says, you've got something going on at your property because we're noticing a high water usage. Well, the disadvantage of the water is you use the water, you're not using it. It's being wasted, but you're also being billed based on the water usage on your sewage. So it's a double whammy using a water meter. So we threw the water meter out, and then we started looking at the electric meter. And the electric meter has nothing to do with stormwater. I'll give you that, okay? But it is a form of measurement, kilowatt hours, and residents have a better chance of controlling their electric use by unplugging things, turning off lights, controlling their air conditioner, their heat, whatever. They have more control of the kilowatt hours that they use. So based on that, we decided to go with electric meter, and then we developed a pricing mechanism into several categories. Residential, we broke it down into, based on kilowatt hour usage, into three different categories with three different pricing mechanisms. For commercial businesses, we developed four categories based on usage. Industrial, we developed two categories based on usage. And if you happen to own a piece of property in Hannibal that does not have an electric meter, there is a flat rate of $95 that we're proposing. And that's Proposition S, and that would develop the funding that would be collected. The funding would be developed monthly but paid annually on the property tax bill that you get from the county, which collects the county property taxes, it collects the city property taxes, and we're hoping to get that funding mechanism put on that bill. It would be come in the fall. It's due by December the 31st. Now, the other thing I would like to point out.
Well,
to
let's take a break because okay. I've got to pay for this lovely time. But Larry Craig is my guest today, and he's talked about several things. So they've rejected the usage of the water, but they've gone with electricity. So my question is, what would everybody go solar? Because then you won't have electricity generating income. And then the other thing is, you know, the yearly and how much you think it's going to cost. So this is a great discussion, and you've laid it out. It's so interesting that this happened, that stormwater is, because it just happens as an act of God, stormwater, you can't measure it, you can't meter it, and therefore, since the Hancock Amendment, you can't charge for it. Okay. So that's the really interesting thing is, it must be done. Something must be done with it. Nobody says that, well, you can just ignore it and it's going to go away.
It's a community problem.
There's no way to there's no way to pay for those improvements. But they've got a way, and we're going to explain that way on Proposition S. We're going to take a break, head up to the URSA Farmers Cooperative, see what's happening on our farm markets today, and we'll be right back. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. I'm enjoying my conversation with Larry Craig. Proposition S is on the April 2nd ballot in Hannibal. Basically, the problem is, since the Hancock Amendment came into effect in 1980, the city of Hannibal Board of Public Works has no way to pay for stormwater, rainwater, stormwater runoff. They have a way to pay for water. They have a way to pay for wastewater treatment. They have a way to pay for electricity, and those things are easily metered. So now they have to be able to measure. So they've decided they'll go with the electric bill. And so let's drill down on this, Larry Craig, this Proposition S. How much, it's hard, but the average person, and let's talk about homeowners versus business people. What's the average person, if they vote yes on Proposition S, what's the average person going to see as an increase? Because it's so low, you're not even going to bill it monthly. You're going to wait and bill it for a whole year. So it's obviously not an astronomical cost. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, for residential, it's three categories. And the small category, it's for people that use up to 715 kilowatt hours. That would be about $12 a month or $144 a year. In the medium range, it goes from 716 to 1,260 kilowatt hours. It would be billed on an annual basis at $192. And then for a large residential usage, more than 1,261 kilowatt hours, that would be approximately $240. On an annual basis. And keep in mind, these are estimates. Again, it's based on kilowatt hour usage, so if you use a lot more than 1,261 kilowatt hours, it's going to be a higher number. And then in commercial, we got four categories break that kilowatt hour down. I don't know if we need to go through each one of the categories, but it's more pricier for the commercial units because...
Sure, well, like, just give an example. Here's your big boy.
Okay.
General Mills. You know, what's...
Well,
gonna...
that's industrial.
That's industrial.
The big boy,
okay.
If they use more than 720,000 kilowatt hours, it could cost them at least $6,840 a year per meter annually.
So, obviously, commercial and industrial customers are going to pay more, but they're not really paying proportionately more. It's kind of being, is it like here in Quincy, our water use, I mean, our big boys pay.
Yep.
They subsidize our homeowners.
Yep.
You know, so is this going to be a thing where the big boys subsidize the homeowner? Is this pretty much across the board kind of
We've tried to make it as fair and equitable across the board for each category. And again, based on kilowatt hours, the cheapest category in commercial is up to 1,015 kilowatt hours, which is almost up to the largest use of a large residential. So, and it goes proportionally up from there based on the size of the commercial business. And there, like I said, there's two categories for industrial.
Obviously, Larry, nobody wants to pay more money.
No. Nope.
So you've been doing this. This failed before. A similar proposition failed before.
Back in 2019, there was a proposal for it was using impervious area, and it failed by 12 votes. That would have generated between $1 million and $1.5 million in revenue, and we wouldn't even be talking about this issue. But we are talking about it, and because it did not pass. And Mary. That was 5 years ago. Tell me what costs the same today as 5 years ago. So the cost of labor, the cost of materials, everything has gone up. The cost of equipment that will be needed to work on these storm water systems has gone up. And therefore, we're estimating, based on these numbers, that it'll raise between $3 to $3.5 million a year. This does not have a sunset on it. But we're hoping we can get the board's hoping that they can get a good control on the total system within about 10 years. And this is not a guarantee, but we have talked about if we get the system up to standard and maintained and improved, then we can talk about establishing a reserve. And once we have a good backup, then discuss lowering these rates to something lower and more manageable for everybody. And all that's possible, but we've got to get a handle on the system. And the other thing I would tell our voters and listeners, it's not a threat. This problem is not going to go away. And it's the city of Hannibal. It's a city of Hannibal problem.
Well, who pays for it now? Because, like you said, the street department just goes and puts a metal plate over there. I mean, if this doesn't pass, obviously, you're not going to have caved-in roads all over the place. You're not going to have the police department sink to the bottom of the ground. I mean, so it's putting it on taxpayers just a different way, right? Is it putting it more on the property?
There's no money to fix it.
But, I mean, if there's a hole in the ground, city of Quincy, the government, I mean, the city of Hannibal has to come in and fill the hole.
The Board of Public Works puts a steel plate over it, and the city secures it down, and we drive over it. And we'll just have to wait until we get some funding. And that's what's been going on. We've got steel plates on several of our streets right now covering holes, and people are driving over it every day. Call it patchwork, call it what you want, but it's a Band-Aid.
Well, to me, it's almost unsafe. I mean,
it's a Band-Aid, and it's not fixing the problem
right
underneath.
Well,
the problem getting bigger over time, and then you got to take that steel plate up and put a bigger one up.
Well, I guess here's the ultimate, and this would be a good example. You know, if the Hannibal Police Department sinks into the ground, the city of Hannibal will have to build a new Hannibal Police Department.
Well, yeah.
This is going to have to be paid for some way or other down the road. You can't just let the whole system fail.
Well, and you bring up a good point. A good portion of the stormwater system is in the older part of Hannibal. And I'm not sure we really know where all the stormwater systems run. I'm afraid some of the stormwater systems that were installed are underneath buildings in the downtown area.
Well, one of the problems I remember from my time living in Hannibal and being a news reporter down there, I know one of the things that they talked about, the wastewater treatment plant said, look, we've got to separate our storm water from, like, when you flush your toilet or run water down your sink, because those systems were just old and all together. And so the wastewater treatment plant was saying, when it rains, it's not just like,
exactly.
I mean, like the average, let's say the average day, on an average day, Hannibal flushes their toilet and runs water in their sink and 3 million gallons, I'll just make that up, go through. But after a heavy rain, 10 million gallons would come through. And, of course, you're paying all that money to treat that rainwater. And so they went through that years ago trying to separate.
You're absolutely correct. The EPA came in and told the Board
of Public Works.
Told the Board of Public Works that they had to separate the two systems because over the years, people, when they were building a house, were putting their sewage line, tying it into the stormwater line. And all that has been corrected over time. That is not a problem anymore. I understand and been told all the sewage water is going to the sewage treatment plant and getting purified and made better than it ever has been, and then being dumped back into the river.
It's cleaner. You it's cleaner to drink it out of the wastewater plant than to go down and put a cup in the Mississippi River.
Yes,
absolutely.
Ma'am. It is.
So this is a very unique problem. Now, it's interesting, though, because do other towns in Missouri have this problem with the Hancock Amendment? I mean, is this a problem anywhere else?
Well, other towns have different funding mechanisms. And
oh, so other towns know this is a problem, but they've already worked to solve it.
They have.
Okay.
And the other issue is the city council back in 2017 told the Board of Public Works that if the stormwater system was underground, it was their problem. If the issue was above ground, the city would take care of it, like the drains and all that. But so there still wasn't a funding mechanism, but the when you looked at what the city has got available, they can only write a sales tax up to a certain percentage, and I think they're already using all the available sales tax money except for like a quarter of 1 cent or an eighth of a cent. So that's not enough to fix the problem. And then there's limitations on the property tax as well. So something needs